KALW.
The data that I have from the pharmacy, they spend more money on asthma medicine than anything else.
West Oakland residents are breathing in disproportionate levels of diesel truck exhaust.
The research is starting to show us that in areas where the air pollution is higher, that can be linked with worse outcomes when people do get sick with COVID.
Today we hear how advocates working to solve this issue have found unlikely allies with the truckers themselves.
This is a human issue. When they were talking about the proximity, you know, they were thinking, well, it's killing us. And I would go, okay, well, what is it doing to the human being inside that truck?
It's part two of West Oakland's Diesel Death Zone from the podcast Living Downstream. A special edition of Cross Currents is coming up. I'm Hannah Baba. Today we're featuring part two of a story from the environmental justice podcast Living Downstream from Northern California Public Media. The podcast explores how, too often, environmental issues unfairly impact communities of color and low-income neighborhoods. Today's story takes us back to West Oakland, a neighborhood surrounded by freeways and bordered by truck routes and a busy shipping port. Residents here breathe and suffer from pollution caused by toxic diesel exhaust. Chemicals in diesel pollution can cause cancer. They can harm the reproductive system, and they can aggravate or cause asthma. Reporter Sarah Holtz takes us into the issue with community organizer Margaret Gordon and the director of clean air advocacy, Will Barrett, who runs the Air Pollution Report Card. It's a project that measures air quality across the country. Margaret's West Oakland neighborhood received two Fs, one for ozone and the other for particle pollution. Here's Will explaining what those failing grades mean.
What that means is really when we're looking at ozone pollution forms when emissions from tailpipes, trucks, ships, and other sources mix in the atmosphere on warm, sunny days. And the health impacts of ozone can range from minor irritation to asthma attacks, cardiovascular challenges, and even premature death. Similar, we're seeing too many unhealthy days for particle pollution. And really, particle pollution is a significant problem in terms of what it can do to our health. Again, that can range from irritation to asthma attacks, heart attacks and strokes, premature death in severe cases, and then breathing particle pollution can cause lung cancer as well. So we know it's a very damaging pollutant.
West Oakland Environmental Indicators Project has deep ties with West Oakland Health Center, the only medical facility in the neighborhood. Asthma is by far their most widespread issue.
The data that I have from the pharmacy, they spend more money on asthma medicine than anything else.
Of course, COVID has disproportionately plagued West Oakland, too, pointing up the health disparities that affect low-income communities of color throughout the country. In the spring of 2020, a Harvard study found a strong correlation between long-term exposure to fine particulate air pollution and COVID death rates. I ask Will about this research.
We know that communities of color have been especially hard hit by COVID, and we also know that increased levels of air pollution can actually increase your risk for infection and actually worsen underlying health conditions. So when we're looking at the pandemic and we know that the burdens have fallen inequitably across the country, we also know that the research is starting to show us that in areas where the air pollution is higher, that can be linked with worse outcomes when people do get sick with COVID.
Miss Margaret has been working from home throughout the pandemic, and even before the first outbreak, she managed her asthma by avoiding walking anywhere near the port. Back at Middle Harbor Park, I meet up with an environmental scientist who uses the park as his running route. Jimmy O'Day is a senior vehicles analyst at the Union of Concerned Scientists, one of WEEP's partner organizations. As a West Oaklander, his work has become both political and personal.
My work as a scientist researching new technologies for battery and fuel cells was squarely motivated by the desire to have better air quality. And now working at it on a policy perspective, you know, I feel like is same end goal in mind, just different strategy perhaps. And so, yeah, I guess I'm very personally invested in improving the air quality, not only in West Oakland, but really everywhere that people have bad air.
Shallow place with water.
Jimmy and I walk to the fence that divides the park from the cargo yard, where containers are piled 20 high. There's been an unprecedented backup of trucks during the pandemic. People are ordering more things online than ever, so imports are at an all-time high. If there was ever a time to remind us about the importance of the cargo industry, it's this past year. After decades of work by people like Miss Margaret, there's a decent solution on the horizon. The scientific, health, and labor communities have come together to support the Advanced Clean Truck Rule. Here again is Jimmy O'Day.
So last summer, California passed a first-of-its-kind policy requiring a given fraction of truck sales to be electric, starting in 2024.
The Advanced Clean Truck Rule sets an important precedent for emissions and public health standards. New York, New Jersey, Oregon, and Washington are working to adopt similar regulations. Still, when I brought up the rule with Brian, he insisted that it falls short of addressing West Oakland's health crisis.
Nothing that allows diesel emissions for another day is strict enough for what's going on in West Oakland.
When it comes to communities that are most impacted by diesel pollution, you can't overlook the truckers who spend hours breathing in diesel fumes every day. You'd think truckers would be first in line to electrify their vehicles. There's also a long-term financial benefit of moving away from diesel. But the purchase cost up front is extremely high.
My name is Bill Abudi. I'm with AB Trucking in Oakland, California.
Miss Margaret has been working with Bill for years. He owns a compound at the port and has been in the trucking business since 1988. 60 trucking companies use Bill's facility for parking, food, and supplies. His company fills a need for truckers and the community. Vehicle operators can find what they need at his lot. And in turn, they don't have to clog up the neighborhood streets. Bill first met Miss Margaret at a public meeting.
I was sitting in the back of the room, and they were talking about a trucking issue, and what they were saying was not correct. And I just couldn't hold it in. I just blurred out something, and I said, "This is not correct." And so the person next to me said, "What's not correct, and how do you know?" I says, "Well, I'm a trucker, and this is why." And so I wouldn't raise my hand because it was a hostile environment to me at the time. And that person turned out to be Miss Margaret. And she raised her hand and she told them that what they're saying is wrong. And they said, "Well, how do you know, Miss Margaret?" "Well, I'm sitting next to a trucker." And so ever since then, I was outed. They invited me up and I just laid it out to them and I explained to them. So pieces started to fit for them. And it was like, they're not our enemy. We need to help them so they can help us.
Miss Margaret admits that she hadn't seriously considered the trucker's perspective before this conversation.
I had to recognize the vulnerability, the impact of the truckers. And that was one of the things that he brought to the table that I didn't see in the beginning. Because I just thought the truck drivers were part of a bigger scope of industry. But as time went on, we learned how government took away truck drivers being under the umbrella of the industry that they serve, made them independent operators that has taken away their ability to negotiate salary conditions. That's one of the things that Bill taught us.
After enduring truck traffic in their neighborhood for decades, residents were hesitant to engage in dialogue with the trucking community. Bill was in a unique position to bridge the divide.
There was a lot of friction between truckers and community. And so when I started attending these meetings, I'm like, wow, the highest level of pollution was the proximity, and we're sitting on top of the engine. And so I started to think of it from the community standpoint. It's like, wow, this is a human issue. And once they started to realize that, because when they were talking about the proximity, you know, they were thinking, well, it's killing us. And I would go, okay, well, what is it doing to the human being inside that truck?
On a Monday afternoon in mid-April, Bill and his dog Sam show me around the yard.
This used to be the parking lot for the Bay Bridge Trail.
He walks me over to a giant steel beam. The city awarded Bill 194,000 pounds of steel from the original Bay Bridge to incorporate into his development. His eyes crinkle as he tells me about how visitors will be able to connect to a piece of industrial history at his yard. Next, we walk past a trucker parked by Bill's office, waiting for his appointment at the port. I ask Bill how the COVID delays have impacted his business.
You know, anytime there's a hiccup, this COVID-19 that's causing all this backlog, we get affected, so it is a bit of a headache.
These days, driving around Oakland or any other city, Amazon Prime delivery trucks feel like a permanent presence. Next day delivery became essential to many when we were sheltering in place, and those goods have to come through somewhere.
The 2 day is great, and now this year they're trying to go to 1 day, so God help us.
Bill points out which trucks in the yard are electric, and I ask him how he feels about the transition to zero emissions.
So we're agnostic to all of that. We just want to make sure that whatever technology comes, we're ready for it. And so if we have to electrify, great. We have lots of good infrastructure here because it's all brand new. And we'll be able to get the electricity that we need. If there's hydrogen, we'll build the station. And obviously there's not a lot of trucks, and it's like a chicken and egg scenario. And so somebody's got to have the infrastructure so that way people can feel comfortable buying a hydrogen truck or buying an electric truck because they know they can plug in.
Just like Miss Margaret, Bill has acted as a conduit between business and community. And he tells me that some of those people are one in the same here in West Oakland.
We're on the same page with the community. It is our community. We're the business side, residential side. A fifth of these truckers that work at the port live in Oakland zip codes.
Bill and I finish our conversation in the cab of one of his cargo trucks. I drove around the neighborhood with Miss Margaret for about an hour, and now that I'm in the yard with Bill, I start to feel the pollution in the back of my throat, just as she had said. I can only imagine what it feels like if you're spending each workday sitting on top of a diesel engine. Oakland's so-called diesel death zone has become just as much a labor issue as it is an environmental one. As the state developed the truck rule, labor groups pointed to the financial burden it puts on drivers. Companies classify their drivers as independent contractors, even though they operate like employees. This way, they can offload the cost of electrification onto workers. But when I talk to Bill, he tells me truckers choose to be independent. If there's one thing both sides agree on, it's that the cost to electrify is prohibitive. Drivers who cannot afford to switch to zero emissions technology are still breathing in diesel fumes day after day. At the same time, Miss Margaret and her neighbors are still living in a portside community dominated by diesel. WEEP is focused on the electrification issue right now, but Miss Margaret and Brian's work is a balancing act.
My main focus right now is keeping West Oakland environment functioning. So there's like seven different things that we're constantly juggling around.
These days, she and Brian have Zoom meetings on the local, state, and national level from morning until night. She's planning a Women of Environmental Justice road tour. When I ask Brian about the new attention to environmental justice among politicians and policymakers, he says it's about time.
But it's even now, which is somewhat shocking, that these words like environmental justice, are getting into the national administrative language. It's finally getting into the script for the speeches. That's kind of hard to take, knowing what we've known, for how long we've known it, and how long people have struggled trying to get justice.
Brian sees the new spotlight on environmental justice as a side effect of new attention to the emergency of climate change.
Unfortunately, the timetables are getting shorter and shorter because we keep realizing the timetable for global climate change is getting shorter and shorter. Not because pollution has been killing people for generations. As I often say, our work for local health improvements is really riding on the coattails of climate change.
It has to be very personal for folks to just want to stay involved.
And for Miss Margaret, with 16 grandkids and a 2-year-old great-grandchild, it is personal. At the memorial celebration, air pollution keeps coming up in conversation, whether it's her cousin's allergies or a passing reference to the truck traffic in the neighborhood. I speak to Miss Margaret's sister-in-law for a while. Her name is Janice Hunter.
So yesterday made a year that my husband passed, Margaret and Paulette's baby brother. So I really wanted to do something to mark the first year, you know, of his passing.
They're also honoring Miss Margaret's late father and her other brother, who passed in 2013.
And actually, that's my son in the blue hat.
Janice introduces me to some of the relatives who made it out for the memorial.
These are all 97% our family relatives, whether it's nieces, nephews, cousins, grandchildren. And then in addition, we have some of our community partners and friends of West Oakland Environmental Indicators that has really been with us for a long time and really kind of bring it together.
Janice started volunteering with WEEP years ago and eventually got a job with Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice. In 2013, she had the chance to accompany Miss Margaret to the White House, where her sister-in-law received the Champions of Change Award. Miss Margaret's decades of work in this environmental justice struggle fit perfectly with the movement's emphasis on empowering fenceline communities. She's shown what can happen when these communities aren't just present, they're at the head of the table, which should be the case for any social justice fight. She's proven that power sharing is essential to making change. Organizational power, but also economic power.
As long as we have capitalism, we're going to have a struggle. People start talking about climate change. They also got to connect the environmental justice. You cannot separate the two. Both of them are doing harm to not just only to the planet, but also to the people.
Unless you're going to start knocking all the knots off.
At the end of the memorial celebration, I catch up with Miss Margaret, who's surrounded by friends and colleagues.
She's a force of nature.
I line up to fill my plate with tacos, and looking around the party, I count 4 generations of Miss Margaret's family, celebrating the lives of those who aren't here. They've gathered by this community garden, which bears fresh vegetables, despite the toxic air and the industrial wasteland spreading in every direction.
That was the second part of the story Diesel Death Zone from the podcast Living Downstream from Northern California Public Media. It explores environmental justice in communities from California to Indonesia. That episode was reported, produced, and mixed by Sarah Holt. You can find the whole show, including a link to their other episodes, at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we're going to hear from a Sonoma County author in a new episode of KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Shugri Sahidzal lives in Sonoma County. Her book, The Last Nomad, came out in August.
You know, when I was a little girl, I was given as a gift of labor to my nomadic grandmother, despite my educated father's objection. And it is the resilience that I learned living with my Powari grandmother that helped me survive going through female circumcision, being sent to an orphanage, fleeing Somali civil war, becoming a refugee, and all the twists and turns my life took that landed me here in California. Although I enjoyed the freedom, nomadic life was not entirely carefree. I had work to do and danger abounded. Under my IAEA's watchful eye, I learned how to do the simple but important tasks of starting a fire, making a flatbread using a hot sand under the fire, and looking after the wahara, baby goats. I herded them close to our huts, and it served as a learning experience for both me and the wahara. At the age of 5 or 6, I graduated looking after a herd of older goats, which I will take farther from the hut in search of a grass to eat. To get a bird's eye view of my herd, I climb a tree or a termite. From my perch, I watch all my goats below, scatter across the land, heads down, grazing contentedly.
That was Shugri Sahitsal reading from The Last Nomad.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can hear more Bay Area authors read from their latest books at kalw.org/newarrivals. Tune in tomorrow at 5. On January 1st, a reporter called up the Bay Area's top COVID experts with a question.
They represent kind of a wide variety of opinions and thoughts about, you know, this pandemic in general. And I just thought, yeah, I'm going to ping them and see, did they wake up more optimistic than they did a year ago?
We'll hear what they said tomorrow at 5. Today's Cross Currents team includes Dorothy Tang, Johanna Miyake, James Rowlands, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Sunni Khaled, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.